I'm going to be moderating this meeting.
And it
is a speaker meeting, so we're going to have three speakers, Rachel, Jordan, and Matt, share for 20 minutes each on their experience as a young person in LA, what it was like coming in, and how they navigate relationships now, having had that early experience. And then afterwards, we'll open it up for questions and answers or just general sharing. So without further ado, I'm going to let Rachel take it away. I've got the time set for 15 minutes, and then you'll have a warning.
Okay.
So, all right, here we go.
Sally, thanks for being willing to wing it on the fly here for us. She just agreed to do this like an hour ago, not even. I'm Rachel P., a recovered compulsive reader.
Hi, Rachel.
I live in Denver, and it's my second birthday party. I'm really glad to be here. I'm going to pass some photos around. I'm moving, and I have like a shit ton of old family photos that I've just been organizing over the past couple weeks, and some of these are freaking cute, if I must say. And so, yeah, if you want to flip through, feel free to. Don't feel like you have to. Let's see. I was born a compulsive overeater. There's a photo in here of me at like, I don't even know, 3 or 4 years old, like with a platter of cookies. And I'm like grabbing one kind of like subtly, not so subtly. It started from a very young age for me. I was born with this. My dad has it too. I had childhood leukemia. I know that like a reinforcement tactic that my parents used was sweets. Whenever I would get my chemo, which was incredibly painful, was to give me sweets. And my sister also had childhood leukemia. She is 5 years younger than I am. We're both survivors of that leukemia, so grateful to still be here. Besides those experiences, I had a pretty good childhood up until I was, about 8 or 9, I started to gain weight. And in fourth grade, I started to get chubby. I grew some really awkward boobs. I got acne and I got braces. So, like, four like major things all in 1 year. Short time span. And it just, like, I was always kind of quiet kid, just isolated. Felt like people didn't really understand me. And part of that, I think, is just my nature, but part of that is also, like, the trauma of the chemo and then my sister's, treatments and all of that. And, of the three of us, I'm the compulsive eater. They have other addictions, but that's why I don't want to struggle with food. When I was 13, my parents divorced, and I was happy to be divorced because I thought all the time it was just a miserable home. When I was 14, during the winter break of my freshman year of high school, my mom committed suicide. She was bipolar, and I found her body. I cried the day that she died. I just remember sitting at the kitchen table and the EMT coming over and telling my dad and I what had happened, and I couldn't believe it. I was in shock and I was just wailing and crying, tears pouring down my face. But then I shut it down. So for the next 4 years, I didn't let myself cry. I didn't let myself cry at her funeral. I didn't let myself feel it. Anytime that image of her, of finding her, came up in my head, I pushed it away and I ate over it. And for the remainder of high school, my dad, he became a meth addict, and he was the verbally, emotionally abusive, pretty much on a daily basis, and it was just miserable. And I ate over it. He would yell and rage at us, and I would go into the basement, and I would eat. And so by the time I graduated high school, I weighed about 275 pounds. I remember going to the doctor to get my immunization shot for college, and that's the scale just kept creeping up. I couldn't believe that I weighed that much because I had avoided the scale to that point for years. And then I got to college. I didn't even apply for any colleges in state because I just wanted out because my dad had just made my life so miserable. And I got to college and I was alone. I didn't know anybody. And I moved myself into the dorm. I packed my car up and arrived. And I couldn't. could not think about my mom. And I started cutting. So I cut for several months. But I started exercising. And I couldn't binge the way that I had been in high school. Because I'm not going to binge in front of my classmates in the dining halls. I would like go to Walmart and buy some of my binge foods and then eat them with my roommate, who was like in a sorority, would go and party. Like I would be sitting in my college dorm, like eating, and then racking myself with guilt and you know, the whole cycle. But I became obsessed with weight loss because I started exercising, and binging was less frequent, but still always there. And I started getting compliments, and I became obsessed with changing my body, and so that started the restriction, the binge restrict over exercise cycle, and I lost 50 pounds, or 70 pounds, excuse me, and then in my last semester, I gained back 50 pounds in about 3 months, that last semester of college. I moved back home, and I weighed myself, I couldn't believe I was back up to 250, and then I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism and started getting treated for that, and recommitted to the restriction, the exercise bulimia, and just even more obsessed with weight loss. It became my every waking thought was just obsessed with weight loss. And I lost another 80, so it was down 100 net. But just thought about food all the time, thought about my next workout, my next binge. I mean, we all know like that itchiness to get to the store and pick out the foods and even in the car, because I couldn't even wait to get home, and then turn on the TV and just eat as long as I could until I felt just so heinously uncomfortable or until it was gone. And that was my life for years. Just out of college, actually, I went to an OA meeting because I had just come off a binge. It was living with my aunt, and Googled Can't Stop Eating, and OA popped up. And name is awful. That's not attractive. OA is not an attractive name. Sorry. I love OA. It's changed my life, but it's not an attractive name. But I went and I heard them say the word God, and I went right back out. I remember getting back in my car and just sobbing, like, this isn't the answer. Like, I thought this would be the answer. Like, I thought this was the thing that was going to fix me, but yet again, it's not a thing that's going to fix me. So I need to find the next diet or whatever it is. Thing that's going to fix me. Finally, in April of 2018, I came to a therapist, and I was in the midst of a certification to become a nutritional therapy consultant. That's how obsessed I was with food, that I was like, I'm gonna study like the best diet and then help other people achieve that. And a friend of mine from that program recommended her therapist. I hadn't seen a therapist since like college, and I have the means, I might as well go see one. Again, it's been a while, and I went to see her, and she's recovered in OA herself. And she told me I needed to go to OA. And of course, I'd known about it. I didn't want to go, but I did. And she had put me on a food plan. And so I came to a meeting on May 2nd, 2018, and it was a speaker meeting. And that speaker actually is here.
Big book study downstairs. Plug.
and she told my story. Like she was a bulimic, and her life was so different than mine. But she told my story, and I heard exactly what I needed to hear. Unlike that first meeting that I had gone to, and it was really beautiful. I was finally at the point where I was ready and willing to do whatever it took, and I did. I have for the past year and 8 months. I haven't had a binge since May 1st of 2018. So I'm just really grateful for this program. One of the themes of this meeting is relationships, and I want to talk about dating topic. I did online dating for years, and I'm sure that's something that a lot of us are familiar with here, like being young people, and we're not like a lot of the other people in this program who have been married for years and who are retired and whatever it is. And I know this is something that young people struggle with our experience more so than people, older people in this program. I didn't have my first kiss until I was 20. I lost my virginity when I was 21, and I, like, for years up until that point, and even afterward, I was just so absorbed with this, like, self-criticism because of that fact that, like, you know, all these other, all my friends around me are in relationships and doing the whole thing, like, on that track, like, dating, relationships, marriage, kids, all the things, and there I was at 20 years old and had never been kissed. I attributed it to my weight. But, you know, so much of my disease was that I isolated, I hid, I couldn't be my authentic self. And so, of course, I couldn't be available for a relationship. And I know that now. But it was such a source of self-criticism and pain and self-hatred for me. That inability, seemingly, to be in a relationship where I saw all these other people successfully doing so. My first boyfriend I met on OkCupid, and some of you may be familiar. It's one of those free dating sites. It was just years of, like, awkward first dates, online dates, swiping, just another obsession, just, you know, similar to the food, like, just obsessed with meeting my person, with finding a relationship, with making this happen. And I later learned that, you know, it couldn't be on my timeline. It had to be on God's timeline. But I didn't know what I didn't know. So I did the online dating thing for years, and it got to the point where, like, I was starting to see, in therapy, I was starting to see this pattern where I would, like, I would see this guy's profile, and I would, like, make up all these stories and fantasies about, like, why he was perfect for me, or why we would click, or whatever it was. And then we would meet, and, you know, either we would click, and I would go way too fast. Like, we'd be, like, making out at his place on the third date. And then, of course, like, that's not the way to forge an authentic, healthy connection. And because of the pace at which it went, it crashed and burned. Or, you know, we would have that first date and we didn't click, and then I would go home and binge because it was like I had all these expectations, and it's that expectation hangover. It didn't fulfill my expectations. So it was just this continual pattern. And finally, you know, I got abstinent. I was in therapy, and my therapist told me, you need to put down the app, the dating apps. Like, I kept saying that I was going to, that I was going to take a break, and then I never did. I keep coming back. And it was to the point where I was, like, swiping and driving at the same time, which is really dangerous. But it was obsessive. It was so obsessive, especially after putting the food down. It totally, like, you know, it's like guacamole. You put one thing down, the other one comes up. And online dating totally became an addiction for me. In December 2018, I put the apps down for real, and I went through this, like, withdrawal period, even worse than with the food. I was crying all the time. I was just like anytime I would go out, I'd be like, where is he? I have to meet him. Like, because I didn't have the apps anymore. itchy. Meet my soulmate. Whatever the hell I was trying to do. You know, that codependency. And so I put them down, and on December 30th, 2018, I was listening to a podcast, a live special edition podcast, Vision for You. And it started at 6:30 in the morning, my time, and I was kind of, like, half asleep, half awake in bed, and, like, trying to listen because I really love the speaker, but also, like, sleep was calling to me. And I, you know, I was kind of, like, lucid dreaming. And in my dream, I was, like, just so, like, feeling the emotions about, like, wanting to meet my person. And just, like, sobbing. Like, not physically sobbing, but, like, in my dream, like, sobbing, like, convulsing, like, so upset about this. And I heard the speaker, like, half asleep, half awake, heard the speaker say something about, like, not needing somebody else to fill your God-sized hole. And it kind of clicked for me. And it sounds really freaky, but, like, I was like, God, I release this fear to you. And I felt fingertips run down my face, like, in my lucid dream. And, it may or may not have been a spiritual experience, but I call it a spiritual experience. Like, I felt that. And I did. I felt this, you know, after I released that fear, this fear about this specific thing, this, like, desperation of wanting to meet a person. Once I released that fear of my higher power, I just felt a sense of ease. And it's, you know, it's still come up for me multiple times, but I, you know, I've been able to come back to that. Like, I release my fear to you, God. But the next day, New Year's Eve, I met my boyfriend. And we've been together now for more than a year. 5 minutes left? Okay, cool. And I really attribute that surrender to being available to talk to him that night. We met on New Year's Eve out at a bar. His brother, like, bumped our table and accidentally bumped our table, and he came over and apologized on his behalf and started talking to me. And you know, because I was in recovery, because I had surrendered in a lot of ways, not in all of the ways, but in a lot of ways, I was more available to be my authentic self. I really do believe this, that I could talk to him as me, without all the fear and the hiding and the isolation, or at least with a lot of that abuse. You know, I'm still a work in progress. And I've done a lot of work on my my compulsions to want somebody else to fill my God-sized hole throughout my kind of program, and I continue to do that work. So yeah, and I have no idea what's going to happen in this relationship. Like, I like to believe that we could make this work, and this could be the one. I don't really believe in the one, but there are people, I think, that really click, and when you find somebody like that, and logistically you can make it work, it can be a great partnership, but, you know, I'm not able to predict the future, and that's continually needing to release that to my higher power. Like, I can't predict the future. I don't know what's going to happen. But, yeah, it's so interesting that for so many years, for 28 years in my disease, I was so alone and just wanted somebody to fix my life, to change me, to make me feel special. And then it wasn't until I was able to bring in my higher power to help assail those fears that I could actually be available for that kind of relationship. I would also like to talk about family relationships, but I only have a few minutes. So just kind of briefly, you know, I talked about how my mom had committed suicide. And that really cemented, like, a fear of abandonment in me. I mean, how could it not, right? Like, your mother does that. And it's still up for me, you know, in my relationship now with my boyfriend. Like, I definitely have that fear of abandonment. But recently, in August, my brother attempted suicide, and I wasn't supposed to be, but I was there, and his girlfriend hacked into his bank account and found out the hotel where he was, where he had taken $2,000 worth of opioids, and we found him, and we saved him. And it's so interesting to reflect on the, this is so fresh for me, my brother. But it's really remarkable to reflect on the experience of my mom, and how I just shut down, how I didn't let myself feel anything, and I ate over it. Versus now with my brother, I didn't have to eat over it. And I learned. I've learned so much in the past several months with all of this, with my brother, who's a drug addict and who, you know, self-medicates with opioids, he's sober now, but he's not working a program, and that, you know, part of me thinks it's only a matter of time before he uses again. But I've had to learn to release that, to release any outcomes, and that's true, I think, in any relationship. it's my brother, my sister, my dad, my boyfriend, my fellows, sponsees, whatever it is, like, if I'm coming into that relationship with expectations, with needing to get something out of it, I'm going to be hurt. And it's not them getting the hurting, it's me getting the hurting. Because I had those expectations. Because I wanted something out of these people. And that's just not the nature of life and healthy relationships. It's wanting to get something. And the beauty of this program is that one of the beautiful things about this program is that it teaches me to give, to understand rather than to be understood. To be available to serve others instead of needing to get. So I know that was really haphazard and kind of all over the place, but thank you all for listening.
All right, before we move on to Jordan, I'd just like to invite us to widen the circle so that people who have filtered in can maybe join them.
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome. My name is Jordan L. I'm from Colorado. I got abstinent and I exclusively attend phone meetings, so I forget that people respond. I'm from Colorado. I live out in the middle of nowhere, so I have to work my entire program over the phone. Which it is perfect for me, like absolutely 100% perfect. I tend to be pretty judgmental. I would say it's probably the worst of my character defects. So it's really good for me that I got to get abstinent and work the steps in an environment that was so anonymous. I've met my sponsor. because she's local to Colorado, so I see her at fellowship events and stuff like that. But my home group is a phone meeting. It's called A Vision for You. It meets 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. There's two meetings, plus what they call a Sunday special edition, which is like a speaker meeting of sorts. They have a website, so you can definitely find them if you want to. I'm in this fellowship of people that have never seen each other, which is a real interesting thing when you're talking about compulsive overeaters, right? It's a real interesting thing. I came into Overeaters Anonymous for the first time in 2012. I was in college. I was a junior, I think. And I came in and I didn't see anyone that looked like me, and that freaked me out pretty bad, I gotta say. Like, when I came into a fellowship of older lot of older women, retirees and stuff like that, I had a real hard time relating. And I found a lot of reasons to take me back out of here. What I'm trying to bring to light today is maybe like some of those reasons and how they can be overcome. Because the fact of the matter is, like, this is a fellowship for more, please no one take offense to this, for more than just rich white women. this fellowship gets to be for all of us. Like, it really, really does. One of the things that was a little different about a lot of people that I heard when I got here, one of those things was childhood obesity, right? Like, I hit 200 pounds in the sixth grade, and a lot of the people that I came in and were talking to, like, they hadn't started gaining weight until later in life or after they had children or whatever it was, you know? So that was one of those things that I was like, you guys don't understand my story. You don't know what's going on. I'm going to pass around my picture of my top weight. I've lost about 100 pounds now. I don't know exactly how much it is because the scale is not my friend, and I didn't look at it a lot. Sure. But that was one of those things. Like, I had been obese since I could remember. I never lived in a normal body ever. So, like, when I start losing weight, these things start coming up that I don't understand, and I want to be able to talk to someone about it. They don't really like understand what I'm talking about, you know. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. I'm not used to speaking in front of people. It's over the phone usually. So another one of the things that I had a hard time getting past back when I first came to face-to-face meetings, I saw a lot of people that were they were really overweight, and they seemed to just be okay with that. And I was like, I'm not okay with that, man. Like, I was what, 23 at the time? I have a long life to live here, right? Like, I'm supposed to be like finding a life partner, and I'm supposed to be getting a job and doing all this stuff, you know? Like, I can't just resign to the fact that I'm going to be fat the rest of my life and going to meetings. So what happened was that actually took me out of here, that sort of attitude that I was seeing in some of the meetings that I was going to. I left. I was like, this is stupid. Like, if I'm going to be fat, I'll do it out in the world on my own, trying to find a better solution than this. And so I kind of set out on a mission to find the sane and healthy way of eating and tried lots of different things over the next, like, 7 years, most of which was self-will. Right? Just trying to like will myself into eating less. One of the things that was so magical about this big book study that I participate in was the fact that they introduced to me this idea of the effect, and the effect of the food and the effect that it has on me. Sorry, we didn't realize it was going to be so big. The effect that the food has on me, right? And it has such a strong effect that it actually produces this phenomenon of craving that starts accounting for things I was never able to account for. So, like, as a kid, I became as overweight as I was, and then as unhappy as my obesity made me, I still continue to eat. That creates some real dissonance in my head here, right? As far as like, why is it I can't control this? Because I have all these normal people around me telling me that I should be able to control it, and I can't seem to figure out how to. And that's because it's having an effect on me, but it's not having on them. It doesn't affect them in the same way. It just doesn't. Dude, my sister is same family, same background. We grew up in a very happy family up in the mountains. No traumas or anything like that. We come from the same sort of upbringing. And she weighs 140 pounds and has her entire adult life and can eat half a cookie. There's one, we ski, right? We like to ski, we're a ski family, and there was one season where she like pulls out half a cookie from previous season, dude. Like she actually ate half the cookie, put it in her pocket, and forgot about it for the entire summer. That doesn't happen to me. That is not the kind of eater I am. It's just not, you know? So that was accounted for, you know? For the first time ever, it was like, holy shit, I'm not crazy. There's other people that they know what I'm talking about. This same, the food has the same effect on them. And it's something that can't be helped. And so what I gotta worry about is not picking it up. I gotta be able to put it down, put down those alcoholic foods and put them down permanently and not pick them up anymore in any form. And that's kind of, that's where I start running into trouble, right? Because I got this obsessive mind. So I need to have a design for living that works properly on a daily basis, you know? So that's what I'm doing here now. And I guess to relate this back to young people's, it's when you come in a program and you're not married and you don't have a couple of kids, and maybe you do, I don't know, right? Like it's, this isn't necessarily about age, but like a lot of times, if you're coming in younger, you're probably single and you don't have any kids and you're not like settled. The way that older people who come in at a little bit older age are. So it's like real hard to differentiate between, like you need a certain amount of self-will in order to make some of those decisions, you know, like is this person my life partner? Is this who I want to spend my life with? Is this person, is this job the right like next career path for me? You know, like it takes a certain amount of self-will to be able to do those things. So there's got to be I don't know. I guess like an understanding of that that I have to work this program on a daily basis in order to stay abstinent. In order to continue to like get to stay here with you guys. Because what happens when I'm eating is I leave and I don't talk to anyone. I isolate myself completely and totally. So in order to get to stay here, I have to be working this program. And in order for me to work this program, like I have to have a higher power. I gotta have guidance from something other than the guidance that I'm receiving from society, right? Like the ideas of if I get the right house, if I get the right car, if I get the right job, if I get the right clothes, if everything looks a certain way, like it's gonna be all good, you know? Like I'm good, I'm validated, I am important, I've established myself in the world. I.e., living your life by self-propulsion, right? So I have to have a higher power in there, helping guide me in that stuff. It can't just be me looking after me and doing what I need to do for me. And I guess that brings me to the other thing that I wanted to talk about, which is sponsorship. And first I'll talk about being sponsored. When I first came in here, this was 7 years ago, I found a sponsor who, I love this woman so much. Like she literally, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her. But it started out very much with this tone of her trying to mother, right? She's not as old as my mom, but it was very, like, this mothering thing. And I'm sure that that had something to do with the fact that I was 23 and coming into these rooms, right? That's not what a sponsor is for. It's become really, really clear to me that it's very important that both your sponsor, no matter what age that person is, and you understand that you two are fellows, that you have to walk shoulder to shoulder, day by day through this. That you have to be accountable to that person the same way that person is accountable to you. You know? A sponsor is not meant to be a financial advisor or a lawyer or anything like that. A sponsor shouldn't even be giving advice, really, except directing back to the literature that we find, directing us back to the literature, whether it's the big book or whether it's OA literature or whatever it is, it's really important for me to be able to, that is very important in order for me to be able to work my program and not have someone else working it for me, you know? I kind of learned that lesson the hard way because that original relationship blew up in both of our faces. We went our separate ways. As I said, I left OA and didn't come back for another 7 years, you know? And she stayed in OA and is doing great. She doesn't sponsor that way anymore, for sure. And we can laugh about it now. You know, it's all good now. and then the other thing is the way that I sponsor, right? Because I am now just over 2 years abstinent, and I sponsor. I take other women through the 12 steps. And actually, most of my sponsees are older than me, which I thought would be weird, but it's not at all, right? Like, it's, again, going back to that idea of we're doing this together, like a day at a time, side by side. There's no one on pedestals. Is that 15?
Yep.
Okay. There's no one on pedestals or anything like that, you know? It's really important for my ego that I remain a human being and I don't start playing God. And that's for me, you know? Don't get me wrong, it keeps I'm sure that sponsees are much happier with that too, because, you know, they don't want me playing God in their lives, but or trying to. That's how I have to do this. So anyway, I think that covers everything that I wanted to talk about. So I'm good.
All right, Matt, you're up next.
All right. My name is Matt. I am a gratefully recovered food addict.
Amen.
I'm really happy to be here, to be able to be of service. That's really my hope for right now. I'm going to try not to let my character defect of fear of other people's opinions get in the way of me just trying to be useful, being honest, telling my story. My story in this program is one of relapse, and, you know, that was really the main theme for me throughout my journey in OA. I am currently abstinent. I've been abstinent for 4 years on flour and sugar. It's a miracle. I'm in the process of doing my 9-step amends, and therefore I qualify to be the Big Book sponsor. So I'm finally working the program as it's laid out, right? You know, Jordan talked about the design for living. You know, I'm actually working the 12 steps, the design for living. So I'm going to kind of just fast forward to kind of what brought me into OA. I'm going to kind of skip my earlier days as a food addict. You know, really, it didn't really start to come up until high school, but I got into most of my trouble as a food addict in college. You know, as an undergrad, I gained like 40 pounds, you know, the 30 pounds, a freshman, it was the freshman 30 for me. You know, and just the combination of, you know, being away from, you know, being on my own and not having to worry about, like, being in a house and being judged. I mean, literally, it was just a recipe for disaster. I mean, it was at the buffet, you know, like, you know, I had, like, points on my my school account, and instead of buying books with it, I would, like, spend it on, like, binge foods. And my mom had this, like, crazy memory of, like, my mom, like, putting, like a couple $100 on my school account just to be able to, you know, purchase my textbooks. And I found that you can, like, put your school ID card in at the vending machine and, like, use your points towards that. And that was, like, a lot of, you know, what my college days were binging. It caught up to me very quickly. I had to take a medical leave from undergrad. And one more thing right before that, this kind of just illustrates the insanity. I was just binging uncontrollably. I couldn't stop. I have like maybe 10 nights, you know, the most I would have is like 10 nights without binging. And I remember locking my keys in my mailbox, which is on the other side of campus. And surely, you know, I wouldn't walk across a college campus in the middle of the night, right, to go and binge. There's no way I would do that. That's what I absolutely did, because that's where this disease took me. It wasn't even a question. I got up, I went, I walked all across campus, I got my keys out of my box, and I went to the Sunoco, and I binged. You know, that was just kind of what I did. I mentioned that I took a medical leave from school. That was when I really exhausted all the options. You know, I saw like a hypnotist. You know, a lot of us can, I'm sure, relate to, you know, various diets. I consulted dietitians. I consulted, you know, these, like, meditation tapes, like just like every imaginable solution. I went to a day clinic to try to address my food addiction. I got a little momentum, I guess, you could say, and then I returned to school. But the behavior started to come up again, and then I was at risk of not being able to finish school. Had I not finished school and had I not found a way at that time, I wouldn't have finished undergraduate. I certainly wouldn't have gone on to get my bachelor's and then my master's degree. And so all of these things that I have in this in my life are a direct result of finding this program and being able to work this program. I found OA in November 2011. It was in Vermont. I went to my first meeting, and I got a sponsor pretty quickly, and I got abstinent pretty quickly. I had it for about a year, wasn't really working the steps too rigorously, and I caught up with me, and I lost my abstinence. Second time around, I got abstinent again. New sponsor, started open. I actually opened up the Big Book at that time, I was reading it, right? But it's a book of action, right? It contains the instructions and kind of what we need to do. It's not like just reading it and then you complete it. So, I was abstinent for about a year. I ended up losing that abstinence in an August night. I'll never forget it. I had this thought. A few weeks before I had broken my abstinence for that third time, I had mentioned to my sponsor that if I eat my breakfast at 2:30 in the morning, that was a break of abstinence, because that wasn't breakfast, it was eating at 2:30 in the morning. So my sponsors, you know, we agreed on that, and, you know, I remember, you know, getting up in the middle of the night and eating my breakfast that were abstinent foods at 2:30, and I, you know, all or nothing thinking kicked in, right? You know, I was like, you know, I blew it, all of those, like, dysfunctional thoughts, like, you know, blew my abstinence, you know, there's no use. I should just kind of like, you know, go all out and reintroduce the flour and sugar, which is what I did, and then I proceeded to go into the worst relapse of my entire life. At the time, had I been able to sort of accept that I needed to break my abstinence, but I didn't actually reintroduce the flour and sugar, it was just, you know, like, I started maybe from day one, but I didn't sort of like, you know, the physical allergy wouldn't have had to kick in. So in those, if anybody in here is struggling to relapse, and sadly, I'm sure there are some people that are, because it's just, it's a theme in this program. This disease is so powerful. You know, if you're able to, like, you know, sort of, you know, minimize the binge and not get into that all or nothing mindset of, like, you know, milking it for all it's worth, you know, it's less painful the next day, right? Fewer calories to count in your head, like, I had last night, or, gee, like, I feel miserable, and that can be very empowering. And those few times I was able to do that, I was able to string together some abstinence. A slip doesn't have to be a slide. That's what my therapist would tell me. I ended up, like as I was saying, breaking my abstinence. I got it back by finally getting involved into the steps. I joined a closed step study and really just applied work, working the steps, being involved in the group. Those boundaries around my food were extremely helpful. Being in relapse, there were a few things that changed. One of them was that I, dove into the steps, and I just found it. I'm from Boston, so I'm not sure if they have those similar groups, those sort of like closed groups. Here, it's a direct study of the steps, but it was very helpful to be able to sort of like have this like additional boundary around my food, because it was easy for me to go and binge if like it was just me, right? Just sort of those like self-defeating thoughts, and it's like maybe I'm not even worth abstinence, and I would just go and there wouldn't be any more thought, but. Something about being in that group was very powerful. It was very helpful. I also added a fourth meal in my meal plan, and it was at my sponsor's recommendation. I was a nighttime binger, I was very opposed to it. I was a few meals a day, nothing in between. That was my mantra. And my sponsor told me that I was a nighttime eater, and that you need a metabolic meal, whatever I want to call it. That was a game changer for me. Being able to have that meal psychologically, if I went to some event at like 5 p.m. and I ate my dinner right, and then the thought of going the next morning without breakfast being that long away, like that's like not good for a food addict. I'm wondering like when is my next meal. So to have that fourth meal integrated into my meal plan was really helpful. I recognize very little of this actually relates to being a young person. As far as the college experiences that I touched on. But as I said, my story was one of relapse, and part of my purpose is to explain how I was able to get abstinent and stay abstinent for the last 4 years. As far as some themes for being a young person in the program, I wrote a few up. How am I doing on time?
You have like 11 minutes.
It looks like we're going to have some more time to hear from other people, which is nice. First theme that I came up with was identification. This is a kind of a bit of a stereotype, but most of the people that are in my meetings at home are 60-year-old retirees, right? And I didn't try not to let that affect me as far as my motivation to go to meetings, but it definitely did. It's hard to explain. There's something about when you're in a room such as this and you see people who look more like you and who have maybe similar values where you are in life, that's really powerful. So that's been a theme for me as being a young person in the program. One of the things that's really tough is that we are minorities in this program, sadly. And as a male, I'm also, that's another as far as being a minority in the program. I also found, though, that got better. There weren't fewer older women, but I changed, right? I was able to be like okay with the fact that like I was here for my recovery and to be able to like be useful to people, work the steps, got a little bit better. I felt that as a young person in the program, I was at a higher risk of relapse. As we know, being a young person. Can often be associated with the nightlife, right? Like going out at night. That's the societal like expectation. And I care very much about what you think of me. So if I'm not going out, I'm thinking like, oh my God, I should be going out. Or what am I doing tonight? This is so lame, judging myself. And then, in the times that I did go out, right, like I was left early to just go and binge. Like, I never even stayed out and partied. Like, that's what, like, the party scenes looked like for me. It was, like, I would, like, go and try to do it in college, and then I would just leave early and then start that, like, get into that self-pity and then just, like, the binge. And, at the time, I said, like, this is so lame, right? Like, I'm going to meetings on Friday and Saturday nights. I'm making outreach calls, like I'm not like involved in the party scene. Looking back on it, like that's like the fucking coolest thing ever. To be able to have that really non-traditional college experience was like amazing. I was able to actually like retain things from class and like actually like improve sort of like my my career and really to be able to be where I am today. Again, it's a direct result of the program. I wouldn't have been able to access a lot of the resources on campus and make the sort of connections that I did if I was in the food or in another substance. So I have another note here about like others' perceptions and so like online dating, we talked about that, right? I just remember it always being such a buzzkill, and the first date, and it was just like, oh, like, no, I don't drink, and it's like, oh, well, you can enjoy something, and it's like, well, I don't really eat flour or sugar. And it's just like, there's nothing sexy about that. And then, like, interrogating, like, the poor waiter or waitress, right, about, like, what items in here do not have any sugar. It's like, it does not equate with sexiness on the first date. So body image was another theme for me. We talked a little bit about body image. This was twofold. When I was abstinent, it was really just kind of filling emptiness with going to the gym and dating, rinse, repeat, really focusing on that physical recovery and being spiritually bankrupt, really just so working just a third of the program. When I was in relapse, I didn't go to the gym. I didn't make many social risks. I isolate, I have another note here. It's like, if pain was a motivator, right, for us to be able to recover successfully, I think we would all be recovered right now, right? The more pain, the more binging, the more self-pity, all of those, the shame the next day, it was never enough. I would tell myself it was, but the next few hours later, I would go and binge again. I mean, that's the insanity of this disease. I'll sort of wrap things up by just saying I'm really grateful to have this program, needless to say, I'm very much looking forward to my journey and to continue to address my character defects and continue to try and be of service kind of pass on what has been given me to me. So thank you.
Open it up for general sharing now. I'm going to set a timer for 2 minutes so that we'll have enough time for everyone, for as many people as we can, to share or to ask a question of our panelists. So without further ado, is there anyone who would like to start? All right, go ahead.
Hi, Katie from Most Over Eater.
Hey!
Thank you, all three of you, for your shares. They were incredible. I got so much out of every single one, and thank you for your service. Rachel, I love your share so much. I connected with it because it was my story, and I so appreciate your vulnerability. And especially talking about dating, it's like, so my question is, it's kind of a three-parter. Have you told your boyfriend that you're in recovery? When did you tell him? And are you happy with that decision? Do you wish you had waited longer, or do you wish you had told him sooner?
It's a really good question, and I hope somebody would ask this, so thank you. and I'd love to connect afterwards. I did tell my boyfriend. I think my therapist told me that I shouldn't tell him until she told me I shouldn't sleep with him until 90 days in, and I was like, you're fucking crazy. I did not wait that long. But I did tell him about the program. Let's see. We met on New Year's Eve. I had him come to a speaker meeting early May, so to celebrate my 1 year. But I'm sure I told him before that. So I probably told him a couple months in. And I was really nervous to do so. And I was just going back and forth, like, when should I tell him? How should I tell him? How's he going to react? Just like playing out all these features, as I do. I do less so of that now, but still do. And he totally showed up for me. His reaction was even better than I thought. And he knew that, like, just observing me eat and the fact that I don't drink, like, this was the first date he had ever been on where there wasn't alcohol involved. And like he saw me eat, and I told him, you know, I basically use the word paleo just because that most closely fits with the way I eat. But you know, when I don't feel comfortable sharing program with people, I tell them like I have an autoimmune disease and I avoid these certain foods because they trigger me to become depressed and gain weight really easily and all those things, and which is true. But yeah, he totally handled it well, and he's totally supportive. Like he knows I'm out here and. I'm really open with him about program.
Anyone else? All right, go for it. I'm Cassie from School Reading.
Hi, Cassie.
Thanks, panel. That was real delicious. So I loved all your shares, all three. You all have like three different perspectives, and I think it's super cool that like three different perspectives, three different stories, three different abstinences in like three different times in program. But like you all have like the one thing in common, like the compulsive eating factor. And like it's the thing that we hate, but it's also the thing that brings us together and like unites us and like tradition one man, unity and stuff. So I love that. I guess what stuck out to me too is that like how much this disease has like cost us. Like in all of our stories, all your stories, you talked about how like you missed out on experiences or you missed out on relationships and you missed out on this and that. And I'm really struggling with that right now, that like I've been in program for a year and I just got 30 days. And I'm having trouble acclimating to life. Like I'm looking at the big picture and like, I for sure, like, I'm an expert on step one. I have a sponsor that, like, every time you, like, relapse, back to step one. And, like, I'm an expert. But, like, I don't know how to do life. Like, I have an emotions wheel, and I have to look at the wheel. And sometimes I'm looking at the wheel for, like, 40 minutes, like, what the hell is wrong? And, like, that's hard. Like, I don't even know my emotions. And it feels like my peers know their emotions so well. And, like, I just feel like a dummy. But also in relationships, like I have no relationship with my family of origin, and it's just because growing up, like I had a mother that was very much a compulsive eater, and she just very isolated, and I never got to express my feelings, but I also never got to have a relationship with my mother, and I didn't really have friends growing up. It was just like me and my disease. So like, it's just so weird having like friends, like that's what program has brought me, that I have friends that I can like pick up the phone and call, and like I can go over to their house, and like that's a miracle in itself. But at the same time, it's like, holy shit, like this person's upset about this, and this person's sad about this, and like I just don't know how to do life. So like, panel, how do I do life? Like, did you guys have trouble like once you like got recovered, or like you felt like at least like on solid ground, like, hey, I'm not gonna think about the food, the obsession's gone, cool. How do you do life? Like, it just, doors open. But it's so overwhelming. Okay, thanks, guys.
Imperfectly.
Thanks,
guys. That was a question.
That was my response. it's not pretty some days. You know, my abstinence is there, right? But, you know, I still get very irritable with my fiance. I still am very... Just like mad and fighting, and you know, I try to just kind of go back to just thinking about which step is applicable. When I'm taking over by fear, I make an outreach call. I was afraid of speaking on this panel. I went for a walk earlier. I called a few people. I told them what I was afraid about, and I asked my higher power to help me remove the fear. I think it's like page 84 in the big book for the fear prayer. I'm not positive on that, but that's a great tool for me. That's really, really helpful. I don't think that answered your question, but that was
how do you do life? It was good.
Okay.
I can answer that.
It's for the panel. How do you do life?
How do I do life? This program gives me a new way of living. So all the ways that I was living, the isolation, the fear, the pain, the dysfunctional relationships wasn't working. And I had to hit a bottom where then I could come in and have the desperation to do whatever my sponsor told me to do, whatever my therapist told me to do, with complete humility and willingness. And slowly, as progress, not perfection, I work the steps, I use the tools, I reach out to people in this community, which is one of the tools. And I don't make decisions on my own. I make them with my higher power and with my fellows. Because left alone to my own devices, I'm back in the disease. And so, I'm not trying to cross that too much, but you're doing all the right things. You're reaching out, you have friends, you work in the program, and that is living. And it could be a beautiful thing.
Sorry, I was also thinking, like, if things are going well, right? You know, don't look for things that aren't going well. So this is something that I would always, like, the self-sabotage, right? Mm-hmm. So, if you have 30 days of abstinence, I'm not saying that, emulate exactly what you're doing every single day, but that's really great. You should feel really good about that.
Thank you. Anyone else? Go for it.
I'm Rachel. I'm a compulsive overeater and restrictor.
Hey, Rachel.
I'm so happy to be here. This meeting has been really nice to sit in a room full of young people. I got abstinent when I was 19. Clean, sober, and abstinent when I was 19, and I'm 27. And I've been abstinent that whole time. And I'm just saying that to, like, because this is a young people's meeting, and just to, like, give a little hope shot, And it has been such a cool experience to be able to, like, go through college, like you were saying, clean, sober, and abstinent. That is not to say that I didn't, like, spiral out on, like, other character defects throughout my time in college. But I don't know. I just feel like before I got abstinent, I was the kind of addict all around that could not function and could not do things. You know what I mean? Like, I would not have been able to go through school. Like, I dropped out of high school because I couldn't do it, So I'm just really, really grateful. And what I want to just share on what you guys were all kind of hitting at was, like, coming into program and feeling different because there were so many people who were much older, One of you mentioned, like, the name Overeaters Anonymous, not being sexy and, like, things like that. And when I started coming to OA, I hated OA. And I'm just going to be completely honest about that. Like, I had been clean and sober for a couple months, and that was, like, a little bit cool. Mm-hmm. And, there was something about, like, standing outside the meeting afterwards and smoking cigarettes, and, like, there was, like, we would go to, like, young people AA stuff, and I just really did not like OA, and I didn't vibe with it. And I came back and got abstinent and stayed abstinent and worked the tools and did all that stuff, even though I didn't feel like I liked OA in the beginning. Now I love it, but in the beginning, because, like, nowhere else in my life were people that were saying that they experienced the same kind of pain with food as I was experiencing, and that they were abstinent, Like, people in my other groups or therapists or whatever, like, they didn't have that experience, you know what I mean? And so, I don't know, it's just, like, a random way of looking at it, maybe, but that was just my experience. Like, I didn't like it, and I kept coming back because I had no other choice. Like, that's really what I believe. Like, there was nobody else that could help me, like, when it came to food, So I went, even though I didn't like it, and I took numbers of people that were much older than me and called them, even though I didn't know what to say, And it definitely got better. And I'm just so grateful. I actually just want to shout out that there was another big OA thing, and we made, like, a young people's Facebook. Mm. And we have that, young people OA Facebook.
2016.
At the Boston conference, right? Yeah. So maybe we could bring that up.
And I guess, speaking of that, there's a young people's meeting, too, that we have going on Thursday nights it's a phone meeting. So, literally, you can all participate if you want to. the info for it is on OA.org, but I have the phone number and stuff here if anyone wanted to take it down. So it's Thursday nights. It is at Oh, because we're in California. I'm like, sorry, it's at 6:30. This happens a lot with the time changes. It's at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday nights. And does anyone want to take down the phone number now?
Sure.
Okay. So it is 605-472-5395. And then after you type that in, it asks for a meeting ID number, and that ID is 378-978. And we have like a WhatsApp going to in order to talk in between it. So if you get on the phone meeting, then we exchange phone numbers and stuff. And if you've never been on a phone meeting, it sounds real weird. I used to go to face-to-face AA, and I got sober that way, so I thought phone meetings were real weird when I was first introduced to them, but they've literally saved my life, so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
You're going
to
finish.
Are you sure?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. James, compulsive overeater.
Hi, James.
Thank you so much for sharing today. I really, really appreciate it. And I really heard so much of my story, and I never fully realized how important that is. I too walked into the rooms in LA, and there's just a slight more mix of people, ages. But the truth is, I walked in and I saw, I didn't really see me. And what did happen for me though was I heard my behaviors. I could see that much. I heard what I was doing in those rooms, and it didn't matter whether it was a woman who was 70 or a man who was 50. They had done or were doing what I was doing with food. And so I was fortunate enough to relate to that. But what I appreciate today is the history that I come from is childhood, college, to where I am today. And that's all I can pull from is this is where I can see my behaviors. And I never fully realized how important it is to say, when I moved to college, that's when this shit got real. And then after that, it just, you know, there were different points, but that shit, when I moved and was alone for the first time, and I had money to spend on foods, that food was, I bought whatever I wanted, and I ate what, I didn't care about whether my roommate saw me, I don't care. I was opening the back thing of cookies, they were like, where do you put all that? and thankfully I was doing 5 hours of dance a day to combat the food that I was eating. I happened to go to college and do that. Or at 2 years old, when I was breaking into my neighbor's house to steal their tuck box, which is a thing of candy, and eat the lot. Like, I ate the lot, and they found me with chocolate around my mouth. Like, that's the history I have, and I just appreciate, I'm on the Region 2 Young Persons Committee, to hear how important it is to hear our stories, to keep people coming back. I really appreciate that. So thank you so much for that.
My name is Callie. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm going to use my hands anyway. I've gone to OA meetings in 2013, and they went, oh, people. I'm like, I don't believe So I stopped going after 2013. And then 2018, I was going, oh, people again, what the fuck? Sanity, okay. But still, I noticed my pattern when life happened, new job, right? Fired. I was fired 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. I never had a full-time job ever because I was obese, I was 300, I was ashamed of myself. I was constantly thinking about what people were thinking when they look at me, she's fat, blah, 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 blah. I couldn't stand reading on my brother's book is mine. So I thought other people's book the way that he book is mine. So my brother's a very judgmental person, and I thought other people were thinking the same way as my brother did, but it wasn't true. So I finally got a part-time job 2 years ago. I had to do a part-time job prior to that. And I said, okay, I got this. I'm in the working world. I'm age 47. That's how ashamed I was. I knew I had an eating problem, drinking problem too, since I was 16. But didn't know how to live life and life then. So, 37, working in the corporate world. And I started gaining weight, and I was like, what the fuck? I need to do something. So, I got into OA, and I went to my first Integrity Conference, which is a Region 1 Brooklyn, and I was amazing. I learned so much. But the OA meetings wasn't enough, because it's hard for me to heal everything, relive, blah, blah, blah. Getting the nuances of how to get your stay abstinent, blah, blah. I was still kind of not getting it. Oh. I got fired. And I don't have to bitch. God had taught me I don't have to go back to my old behavior. But I did go back to my old behavior briefly the past 4 months. So now he'll control me. Back you, my back. I'm grateful she fired me, but at the same time, I was able to make a amends to her. I forgive you for all the horrible things you said to me. And then she walked away. Oh, she was a magnificent bitch. But I was afraid. Here, I was afraid. They back everything on one. That was my acronym. But now I was
everything on recovery. Thank you. Sure, I'm Ariel,
the Bulls Reader.
Hey, Ariel.
Sorry, I'm so glad I came to this particular meeting to not qualify. I'm 41, so I don't even think I'm a young person, but I just really appreciate being here with all of you, and I love everything that I heard today. I was thinking, we just recently started a young person's meeting back in San Diego, and first one, the person said, like, oh, let's talk about, you know, the struggles we have as a young person. I'm like, well, I don't have kids. I don't have a significant other. I don't have roommates anymore. Hallelujah. And I'm not, like, older either, so that, and I'm not in school, so I don't have that stress, and I am also not older, so I don't have, like, you know, my friends dying or my parents dying, like that kind of stuff that older people have that we don't have. And so it was kind of like a question. I was like, oh, I've never really thought about this. But I came into program, like, for sure, like, hardcore when I was, like, 28. And so I guess I was still young then. And what I would say about that particular time in my life and that particular struggle of being a young person is, like other people have mentioned, dating and drinking. Those are, like, the things that were pretty prevalent, and I guess are still kind of prevalent for me. Part of, for me, my body image was when I came into program and started losing weight, and started feeling good about my body, and started feeling good about looking people in the eye, and, like, not being fearful and hateful all the time, I started getting attention. And I liked that. And, I got super high off of attention from dudes, and I had never felt that power before. I had never felt that, or tapped into that, or acknowledged that, or however that goes. So that certainly has been, like, a new high that I've discovered about myself that I'm addressing in another program. But I'll end with that. Thanks for being here.
I'm really grateful that I heard all of your stories. I related a lot to all of them, and just really grateful to be. I think this has been the first time in like a circle here, so it feels good. And yeah, and it's even just like nice to hear about, to like crosstalk, just like hear how steadfast like you work like a phone program. I'm like, wow, I wish I could do that, because but it's so beautiful, because I'm like, oh wow. So yeah, and I was like, oh, this is cool, like maybe in like 20 or 40, 60 years we'll all be here again. Like, all the message, like it made me like, I was like, oh, this is cool. So yeah, I'm really, really grateful to be here. And yeah, even just relating to, I entered the rooms during college, and I remember, I think it was like right after college, I grew up on Long Island in New York, and like it was like a church filled with mostly older women who, like, as soon as I opened the door, I was like, oh my God. And it was grateful because I became, like, they really had such a strong abstinence in that group. And, but I remember when I would, at the time, like, intern in the city or something, like, I was like, oh my God, young people at some of the meetings. And so it was really, it's just like really nice to relate. And, yeah, and I just moved here to Los Angeles from New York, like, as of yesterday. So I'm excited to be here. I'm like really, like, legit. Like, I'm just like super excited to be here, and excited about the meetings here. And yeah, that's about it. It's just, it's actually, I was wondering if like quick the panel to ask or comment on like their meditation or prayer practices, super quick. I ate up time.
Any panelists who want to answer?
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah, that's a great question. My meditation practice is imperfect, but I use an app that I'll either do a guided meditation or just a set a timer. It's a free app, and I set an intention for this year, intention, not a resolution, because I don't believe in resolutions, to meditate every day this year. And you know, they say praying is talking to God, and meditating is listening. So that's kind of my goal, is just be available and be quiet and focus on the breath. And the thoughts do come in, but let them pass.
My name's Jordan. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater.
Hey, Jordan.
So that's so cool. I never get that anymore, you know? So my boyfriend, my partner, I live with him. So it's weird to call him my boyfriend. I prefer to call him my partner, because it's much more of that these days. He's a recovered alcoholic and heroin addict, so we get to pray and meditate together in the morning, because he's got his own program that he works. So we disagree on a lot of things still, though, which is awesome, because we get to have like these really cool discussions about recovery, and about different ways of sponsoring or different ways of presenting things. And we have like our differing opinions. And I learn a lot from him. I wouldn't tell him that because it would go to his head. but I learn a lot from him. In the discussions that we talk about, he's actually taught me a lot about God too, and the kind of higher power that I needed to find when I came in here. Because similar to the thinking that I was somehow broken when I came in here, or I was somehow wrong, but I had like this broken higher power too that wasn't working for me at all. So I get to sort of like restart all of that, and I found a new conception of a higher power. And so these days, after going all the way through the steps, I get up. We usually get up together and say the third step. I say the third step and seventh step prayer every morning, just because of, I don't know, my sponsorship lineage, I guess, is where I was taught with that. I get on my knees these days, I pray out loud.
It's really important for me to hear those words coming out of my mouth. As you can imagine, like, my entire program is auditory these days, the whole thing. So it's so, I get so much out of that experience of hearing something. And then he says the 11-step prayer, and I ask him to say it out loud because he doesn't usually pray out loud, but I ask him to say it out loud so I can hear it, you know? And then as far as meditation goes, it's usually, I'm not good at sitting still. So a lot of times my meditation is done in, like while I'm doing other activities. I have an hour commute to work in which I don't get phone service, which is actually really good because it forces me to be with me. And it's just me and God on the way to work every morning. So it gives me an hour to reflect. Sometimes I listen to music too. I get a lot out of listening to music. It just like uplifting stuff, not like Christian music per se, but like for instance, I Pink just came out with a new album called Hurts to Be Human. It's a really great album. It's got these really, really insightful song lyrics in it, you know? So I find like inspiration or intuition in lots of different places these days. I have another hour commute home, and I kind of consider that part of my 11 step too. By the time when I get home, I usually hang out with Nathan for an hour, we eat dinner, I talk to a sponsee for an hour, I take a bath or a shower after that, and by that time it's 9 o'clock. I get up really early because my phone meetings are early, so I'm trying to get in bed. So I don't have, it doesn't make sense for me to do my reflection at night before I go to bed. The Big Book has very specific instructions on that, but I have to find a way to work this program that makes sense, you know? For me, and that commute home is when it makes sense to me to reflect. So I do a lot of reflecting about work and the way that I conduct myself at work. I've made a lot of progress in that department in the last 5 years. I've gone I've worked for the same company for the last 6 years. I've gone from my first year in review ending with like my boss telling me that she doesn't want to have to fire me, she doesn't want me to quit, but basically no one likes to work with me and we need to fix this. To my most recent year in review, my boss called, I have a different boss now because I've switched around to different jobs, but my boss called me an asset to our company. That's a big, big difference. And I attribute that to the time I'm willing to take to reflect on how it is that I'm conducting myself on a daily basis, you know? And then discussing that with someone if need be, because that's another important part of this, is I cannot do this alone. I tried real hard. If I could have done it alone, I would have done it alone, trust me. but I can't. And these days, I'm grateful for that. So that's it.
I just want to add, just real quick. Yeah, I think if anybody's like really opposed to like prayer and meditation, I think doing like 5 minutes is really better than nothing. For me, like it was the all or nothing thinking that got in the way. It's like I needed to be doing it perfectly. So to just kind of like sometimes my meditation in the morning take is literally like 5 minutes, and I have like zero attention span, and I'm like all over the place. But you know, it's constructive action, right? And I'm taking it, and I'm flexing those muscles. So I think that can be helpful. Also, if anybody does have a smartphone, Game Changer is the OA Spiritual Toolkit. I don't know if anybody's heard of that. It's an incredible app. It has like the On Awakening prayer. You can do gratitude lists. 9, 10, and 11 inventory. At night, like awesome, awesome app that's completely free. So I just wanted to put a little plug for that.
Thank you.
We have time for about two more shares, and my timer has unfortunately stopped working, so why don't you go for it?
I'm Katie, compulsive reader and bulimic.
Hey, Katie.
And I actually have a question for the panel with a bit of explanation. So I joined OA in April of 2018, much heavier than I am now, and I've been bulimic for about 20 years. And so I went to a dietitian who's endorsed by a lot of the people in my OA program. She's actually cited in the OA book, and I was given what I now think is maybe too restrictive a plan, and so I thought that I was abstinent, but I think that really I was just restricting for a long time, and that was kind of reinforced because there were so many older people in the group, I think, who had to eat a certain way because they were pre-diabetic, because they were, you know, whatever was going on with them. And so now I've switched, and I have a new dietitian and a new therapist who both specialize in eating disorders. And I feel like a lot of the information they're giving me really conflicts with what some of the older women in OA are saying. And so I'm wondering if you all have any experience like trying to follow other people's food plans, whether that's because they're explicitly telling you to, or because you just hear the same thing over and over again in the meetings, and how you handle that.
I can answer that. So I do think it's really important to get a food plan from a qualified professional. I got mine from my therapist. My therapist is a vegan. So her food plan had, you know, protein sources that were vegan. And so I, under her guidance and that of my sponsor, I made modifications to include animal protein. Her plan also, the reason I resisted it for several weeks before I started was because it had a lot less fat than I thought was right. And I have a nutrition certification, and I thought I knew all the answers, but I was just to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm going to do this. And if it doesn't work, if I feel too hungry, if I feel deprived, I will need to reevaluate and get and find a new professional to get a different plan from. But I did it, and it worked. And under her supervision, once I got the maintenance, I was able to add another starch and additional fats. And I have been at the same weight for the past year on that maintenance plan, which is a miracle because my weight was always just so up and down. And that's just my experience. But yeah, if you know, I tell all my sponsees, I don't want you to feel deprived. I don't want you to feel hungry. I don't want you to go to bed hungry. So we should be getting enough food. And so, you know, if that's coming up for you, of course, reevaluate under the guidance of a professional and sponsor. And I think it's just important not to be making those decisions on my own,
right,
because I'm an addict.
You just have, like, honesty and, you know, willingness to kind of surrender is kind of like things that I'm thinking of when you're speaking, Rachel. So I think that's so key, too. You know, we have a pretty good idea, or at least I think I have a pretty good idea when I have something in my food plan that probably should go, or I have a little too much food. You know, I can, like, dilute things, but, like, it's quick and it's there. If I pay attention, I hear it, like, you should probably reconsider having that. Or maybe consult somebody about that. So I think that can be really, really helpful.
I had that experience. I sort of, in between the first time that I came into OA and this time, I had the sponsor give me her food plan. I am a huge proponent these days that that's not how this is done at all, in any way, shape, or form. Just because my sponsor is eating that way does not mean that that's what's right for me. I didn't stay abstinent after that either. Luckily the food plan was entirely abstinent for me. It was something that I was able to experience a lot of weight loss on very quickly, and I was able to understand what it felt like to live free from food and to live free from food obsession. I like I said, I wasn't in OA at the time. I wasn't working in programs, so I didn't stay abstinent. But it's very important that I have a clear understanding of the foods that have that effect that I was talking about, the phenomenon of craving on me, because it's different. I have friends in program that can eat stuff that I cannot eat. I have a friend that can eat corn chips, dude.
Yep.
I swear to God, she can sit there and weigh and measure her fucking corn chips, and she's good. You know, I can't do that. It doesn't work for me. So it's really, really important that I am getting 100% clear on what substances are a problem for me. like they were talking about getting honest with the nutritionist about it.
All right, I think that is the conclusion of this meeting. So if everyone would like to circle up, we can close with the wee version of the serenity prayer.
God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change.